Welcome to the Masonic Authors Guild International, where each week two historians review and critique books and other productions focused on Freemasonry, as well as discuss broader issues in historical research. The Guild members are Robert Cooper, Curator Emeritus of the Grand Lodge of Scotland, who lives in Edinburgh, and Mark Tabbert, former Curator of the George Washington Masonic National Memorial, Alexandria, Virginia, who lives in Iowa. Both Guild members have published significant academic historical research and have contributed to Masonic journals and magazines. Together, they have over 65 years as Freemasons and are members of numerous Masonic research societies and lodges in Europe and North America. The Masonic Authors Guild International's mission, as well as these podcasts, is to promote the highest professional and academic standards in Masonic research, education, and publications. These podcasts begin the Guild's mission by reviewing those that do or do not uphold the highest academic standards and explain why they do or do not.
Along with Masonic-related book reviews, the Masonic Authors Guild International periodically enjoys addressing foundational practices of high-quality historical research or broader issues in understanding the history of Freemasonry. In today's episode, we begin a discussion on famous Freemasons. With what will potentially grow to extended conversations, we will ask such questions as, who is a Freemason? What makes a person famous? Who exactly is a famous Freemason? Conversely, what about presumed or so-called Freemasons and infamous Freemasons? How do we account for those Masons who become infamous criminals or participated in what is now considered reprehensible activities, such as American racist segregationists of the mid-20th century? We certainly don't expect to answer these complicated questions in this short podcast, but at the least, we can make a few definitions by examples.
American philosopher Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote, "There is probably no history, only biography. And nowhere in human endeavors is this as true as in Freemasonry." Reverend James Anderson's first Masonic history, contained within his 1723 constitutions, begins with Adam and proceeds to name drop as Masons everyone from Noah, Solomon, Ptolemy, Caesar Augustus, all the way to King Æthelstan and Sir Christopher Wren. Since Anderson's time, every generation of Freemason and anti-Freemason have compiled lists of the famous and infamous, which now appear on nearly every Masonic Grand Lodge website and are reused in endless social media posts. All such discussions of Masonic fame must begin with William R. Denslow's four-volume, 10,000 Famous Freemasons, published by the Missouri Lodge of Research in 1957. Former U.S. President, past Grand Master, and past Master of the Lodge, Harry S. Truman wrote the foreword. The title is a bit misleading, as to reach 10,000, Denslow included many men who are often counted as Masons, but he attempts to disprove, such as Alexander Hamilton, Abraham Lincoln, and even William Shakespeare. In his introduction, Denslow states, quote, "It is difficult to establish a criteria for inclusion in these volumes. The reader will note, for instance, that many famous Freemasons have been overlooked, whereas many famous men who were anti-Masons are included. Former members who have been backsliders are noted as such when it comes to our attention, and famous men who have been expelled are listed also. We have given the facts and have not attempted to claim what was not ours," unquote. Before we get to the famous, let's start briefly reviewing how to confirm a man is or was a Freemason. We can talk about women another day. There's only one source that can affirm or deny a man's membership, a Grand Lodge. While Lodge Minute Books are the ultimate primary source, for men can only be made Masons, quote, "in a duly constituted lodge with a charter or warrant empowering them to work," unquote, but only a Grand Lodge can certify the candidate was worthy to receive the degrees and the lodge was in good standing to perform the work. A discussion of a Grand Master's prerogative to make a Mason at site will be touched upon later. When a man is identified as a Freemason, first his membership must be traced to a specific lodge who holds a charter from a regular and recognized Grand Lodge. Then there must be a record of him receiving at least the entered apprentice degree in the lodge's meeting minutes. Or, lacking minutes, the man is identified as a Mason by attending a tiled Grand Lodge meeting or other official function as recorded in the Grand Lodge's proceedings. Here are three Virginia examples. President George Washington, His Lodge of Minute books exist and show him receiving all 3 degrees. After he died, the Grand Lodge of Virginia's 1800 necrology affirmed his membership. Second, Chief Justice John Marshall. There are no lodge minutes to confirm his membership, but as he served as Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of Virginia between 1793 and 1795, there is no question that he was a Freemason. Lastly, President Thomas Jefferson, who is often assumed to be a Freemason, but there was no lodge anywhere near Charlottesville when he was living at Monticello before 1776, and there's no mention of Freemasonry anywhere within his vast correspondence of more than 20,000 letters. People have suggested that he was a Freemason because he attended the Masonic cornerstone ceremony of the University of Virginia's main building, but more likely he attended because he founded that university. Until a minute book from a duly constituted lodge is found, or a Grand Lodge is willing to certify as such, Thomas Jefferson is certainly famous, but not a Freemason. So to recap, to be a famous Freemason, there must be a primary evidence of a man's Masonic membership, or he's not a Mason, but could be famous.
In our Magi opinion, and for this episode, there are essentially four types of famous Freemasons. Those who are famous within Freemasonry for their Masonic activities. Those who are publicly famous, but not famous for their Masonic activities. Those very few who are publicly famous and famous for their Masonic activities. And lastly, those who are infamous, both publicly and Masonically. The first type are those men who are Masonically famous because they made great contributions to the craft. Examples are, of course, the Scotsman, the Reverend James Anderson, the Chevalier Ramsay, and William Preston, all coincidentally famous for their writings. The Constitutions of 1723, the Oration of 1737, and the Illustrations of Masonry, published in 1772, respectively. However, these types of famous Masons are not known to the general public. Certainly, some of these men had a public reputation on the national or even international level, such as Sir Walter Scott, Albert Pike, or Joseph Fort Newton. Most, however, have faded from public memory, yet are recalled with reverence by many Freemasons, their lodges and grand lodges. Then there are men who are publicly famous, but who also happen to be Freemasons. Examples are King George VI, Sir Winston Churchill, department store founder J.C. Penney, and actor John Wayne. Most of such men who joined the craft attended very few meetings. The impact that Freemasonry had upon them is unclear. They may have been proud of their membership, and it was probably something that they enjoyed on a casual level. Such men were famous, but not because they were Freemasons. Three particularly military favourites and nearly of equal rank are Field Marshal Sir Douglas Haig, General of the Army, and Secretary of State George C. Marshall, and General of the Army Douglas MacArthur. The first, Earl Haig, was initiated in Elgin's Lodge at Leven, number 91, in 1882, but not passed then raised a Master Mason until 1924. In other words, it was a 44-year gap after his initiation that he was passed and raised. But in 1926, he served as Worshipful Master of the Lodge. General Marshall was made a Mason at sight on December the 16th, 1941, by Ara M. Daniels, Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of the District of Columbia, but is not known to have ever attended another Masonic event, but he was rather busy for the next few years. General MacArthur joined Freemasonry in the Philippines in 1936. It is often said that he was made a Mason at sight by the Grand Master, but he actually received all 3 degrees in one day. However, he joined when he was 56 years old and after he had retired, for the first time, from the United States Army. It's a bit absurd to suggest that Freemasonry played a significant role in Field Marshal Haig's, General Marshall's, or General MacArthur's lives. All three had already achieved not only the highest military office, served as a vast number of other capacities, offices, and vocations. Certainly, they supported the craft for the rest of their lives, but none of these activities shaped their character or guided their actions. For generations, the inability or unwillingness of Freemasons to clearly delineate between famous Freemasons and the publicly famous who happen to be Freemasons has created great confusion. Within the craft, many brothers attempt to equate Masonic success or Masonic honours with public success or honours. While it is a wonderful thing that Frank Land created and grew De Molay for Boys into a great international organisation, it is not in the same league as Henry Ford's success in the automobile industry. Yes, it is wonderful that Rob Morris to be called the Poet Laureate of Freemasonry, but his poetry is not on a par with that of Rudyard Kipling.
On the other hand, there are those very few truly publicly famous men who also remain truly famous Freemasons. A few examples are the Scottish poet Robert Burns, Benjamin Franklin, Texas founder Stephen Austin, King Edward VII, and silent film actor and Shriners Imperial Potentate Harold Lloyd. One of the lesser-known famous Freemasons is Vannevar Bush, born 1890 and died in 1974, who was President Franklin Roosevelt's chief scientific advisor, and he headed the World War II Office of Scientific Research and Development, which helped develop sophisticated radar, the atomic bomb, and other projects. He was later responsible for the creation of the U.S. National Science Foundation. He helped create Raytheon Corporation and was dean of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology School of Engineering. He was a charter member of Richard C. McLaren Lodge, the MIT Lodge, in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and in 1922 was the Lodge's second master. But a more obvious example is President Harry S. Truman. He joined Freemasonry when he was a young man, and as his career and life developed, he continued to participate in the craft and join more Masonic organizations. In 1942, when a U.S. senator from Missouri, he was elected Grand Master of the Grand Lodge. During his 7 years as president, he made monumental decisions that continued to shape the world today, while he also found time to support Freemasonry. Even in his retirement, he made frequent appearances at Masonic events in the Show Me State and elsewhere.
The last two types we will briefly touch on are the infamous Freemasons and the famous non-Freemasons. One of the standard slogans of American Freemasonry is, "We make good men better." But of course, in all human institutions, there are always a few who profoundly fail to live up to the morality of the craft, fail to keep within the compasses, or otherwise willingly partake in the worst sort of criminal acts. Legion are the numbers of Masons convicted of embezzlement, fraud, assault, murder, and treason. A few of the most infamous Freemasons are American General Benedict Arnold, French Revolutionary Louis-Anton de Sade Just, Alabama governor, segregationist, and president candidate George Wallace, English criminal and convicted murderer Keith James Noy, and more recently, the 2011 Norwegian mass murderer Anders Breivik. Lastly, there are those men who almost always appear among the list of famous Freemasons and are usually assumed to be, but there is no evidence that they were. A few examples are John Adams, Davy Crockett, King James VI of Scotland, 1st of England, and the novelist Robert Louis Stevenson. I'm going to throw in the French philosopher Voltaire. Yes, he was made a Freemason, but he was an elderly man when the degrees were conferred, and he died of exhaustion 2 weeks later.
Contrary to our discussion, Admiral of the Fleet William Halsey Jr., not a Freemason, once said, quote, "There are no great men. There are only great challenges, which ordinary men like you and me are forced by circumstance to meet," unquote. And of course, if you are a follower of the German philosophers, George Friedrich Hegel or Karl Marx, then dialectical materialism considers an individual's life as inconsequential within the greater economic forces or class struggles that drive human history. But these are topics for future discussions. Today, at least, we Magi are content to offer clarifications and classifications of Freemasons, famous, unfamous, and infamous.
Goodbye from us Magi. Good luck and Godspeed. This podcast is for educational purposes and perhaps entertainment. While the Masonic Authors Guild International provides the most accurate information possible, listeners use the information at their own risk. This podcast and its contents are Magi's property, as are all the opinions and information it presents. Robert L. D. Cooper's, Mark A. Tabert's, and any other speakers' views and opinions within the podcast do not represent nor speak for Freemasonry, any Masonic organization, their former or current employers in any way, shape, or form. Magi, Cooper, or Tabert will not compensate you in any way whatsoever if you ever happen to suffer an inconvenience due to the information herein contained.